people in my district. I received a number of correspondence from my constituents on this issue. And, you know, one of them, I think, I thought pretty well summed it up. This is from a woman in my neighborhood, Charlene. We've ridden together out on community patrol. She's done a lot to help revitalize our neighborhood. She is a good, decent citizen. And Madam Speaker, I'd just like to read this one letter, if I may. Dear Alan, the General Relief Medical is in trouble and may not be funded this year. For some of us, this is the only help and hope we have until SSI and Medicaid can be approved. I was one of these people who always thought I could handle any given situation. When I could no longer work, I sold almost everything I owned in order to try to pay for my own medical. I finally just could not do this alone and had to ask for help. It can take 2 years or more for approval of SSI and Medicaid. This program pays for medicines, 12 doctor visits a year. I use this up in about 6 weeks, and gives the person $280 a month to help with expenses. $280 is not very much, but I can at least pay for part of my rent, and it helps to make me feel not quite so useless. Without this program, I would not even be able to continue with the medicines I need for my diabetes, high blood pressure, pain medicine, or the medicines I need to help fight kidney disease, the nerve damage in my shoulder and right arm, or my depression. When SSI is approved, they pay back this $280 per month amount to the GRM program so it can again help others. From what I can understand so far, there is a part of this program that some people object to. If this is the case, then why don't they try to just change the part they don't like and not take the only hope some of us have? The only hope that some of us have. That's what this budget reduction does, Madam Speaker. It takes away the only hope that some people have. Madam Speaker, this is something that really saddens me, to see this body move forward with this type of cut, taking away the only hope that some people have. Madam Speaker, our state is supposed to be one of opportunity. We are supposed to provide hope for people, not take it away. Madam Speaker, there are people in this body who are so adamantly opposed to a certain policies of the state that they're willing to take away the only hope that some people have. This policy that they're so opposed to, Madam Speaker, is the constitutionally mandated requirement that the state provide abortion services to poor women. Madam Speaker, General Relief Medical, for the past 5 fiscal years, abortion expenditures represented only 12.5 6% of the total general relief medical program expenditures. The 87.5% of those monies, Madam Speaker, went to meet the needs of the poorest of the poor in Alaska. That 87.5%, Madam Speaker, it went to provide hope for those poor Alaskans. This amendment, Madam Speaker, would restore that hope. We would give hope back to those people once again. We would give hope to regular Alaskans who have no other place to turn to. We are not asking with this amendment, Madam Speaker, to fully fund all the needs of Alaskans. If we were to be doing that, we would be asking for over $4 million. What we are asking for with this amendment, Madam Speaker, is to meet the bare minimum, the bare minimum. I hope that when it comes time to say yes or no, Madam Speaker, that the members of this body have it inside their hearts to restore hope to our poor Alaskans.
Representative Barnes?
Madam Speaker, I would like the previous speaker to stand up on this floor and tell us where in the Constitution it says we have to provide abortions.
Further debate? Representative Martin?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The amendment does address part of the problem that is perceived, and I do realize that the gentleman has not had an opportunity to come to many finance committees and to see what has been happening in the increase of various health programs for youth and adults and infants, just as I have not had an opportunity to sit on his committee to find out what's going on. I take it for trust that each of us within our caucus have worked for the best, and then we get it to our committee and do what our committee is able to do. In this particular case, what we have done under the general relief monies is, yes, we zapped it out because of what we see in the misuse of the amount of dollars that have been appropriated. And by the way, Madam Speaker, while we have time, I would like to ask for a call of the House on this amendment.
There is a call. There's a call placed on the House. Go ahead, Representative Martin.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. One of the most important things that we've done, and I give the chairman of the committee for this, is working and transferring monies that would normally be in the general relief to add adoption services. We've not only done that during the summer, working with the governor wholeheartedly, because he said he would see a lot less abortions if we could have these other programs like adoptions and further and foster care. And so those programs are going to be treated very well in this state, which I have always supported, and I'm glad to see that we're increasing it. And just this morning, we just briefly talked about another bill. I guess you'll give me permission to talk about that, where we are increasing the monies for other programs in mental health. I'm trying to find the bill. I think it's 396. And so this is for the Healthy Start program for children, for prenatal care for mothers to be, infant care and birth care programs. So I think under Smart Start program and the Finance Committee, they've been working very well for a positive image of Alaska. We've also, we'll see that there's been increases in other programs for adult public assistance program, Division of Mental Health Trust. Some of the cases we heard about the other day, it seems to me that they're taking an awful long time to transfer these cases that do have mental health programs, and there should be a direct door to the Mental Health Society and Trust Fund, as we have in Anchorage, and I know they have the facilities in Fairbanks, for these people to go there directly for the services they need. So that's one loophole. I'd like to find out why it takes so long, because certainly the mental health people do have the money to take care of these people. So some of the money that, well, mostly all the money that has taken out of general relief medical had been transferred and increased to many other aspects of our health for so-called poorest of the poor. I did get that letter from Mrs. I shouldn't use her name, but the lady that lives on 1200 block of East 10th Avenue, and we did attempt to try to call her and try to give her more information of where to get the other services that she should be having, rather than just relieve on general leaf medicine. It seems that something's wrong, that she'd been on this program for so long. But now we know we will have met other programs. I think the finance chair could tell you that we're extending more waivers into the Medicare program so that those people can be picked up quicker. This will be general fund matching service monies with the Medicaid and Medicare programs. So it's not dropping the poorest or the poor out of this program. What it is doing, though, is a very important thing, and that is solving a problem that many of us have with this state, and that is the deplorable abortion-free abortions that is going on, way beyond anyone's imagination of what was needed. Very few states have a free abortion policy like we do in this state. It's completely wide open. We found from the National Legal Abortions Association, they gave me a document here showing how many states do fund abortion, and it's only 15, of which four in the last year have dropped the state funding of abortion because it's getting out of hand. So it's less than 11. There is no constitutional demand. It is constitutional that a person has the right to abortion, just like you do for the right to bear arms or the right to freedom of speech, whatever, but the government doesn't have to pay for it. That's the most important thing. If you want these free abortions, pay for it yourself. There's very, very few people in this state that cannot pay for their own abortion, especially if we were always talking about the poor lady, the poor woman. Well, she's poor in many, many aspects, in the sense that some male misused her in most cases. And it's the male that we ought to make responsible for paying for his irresponsible activities and action, and then making the female suffer from it. When you get to abortion, I'm really surprised where you got this number, 87% of the budget in general relief is used for other programs, which is not. We have tried in the past 2 years ago, we took out $485,000 that they said they used for elective abortions. And then we found out that very year they increased by about 50 new abortions. And then last year, we kind of left it alone, but they increased the same amount of money to 116 more abortions in 1 year. Now, on this year here, we've been thinking that they were there was one number, 446 elected abortions. They said they spent $500,000. Well, later, as we began looking into it, we found out it was $892,000 that they spent on elective abortions under GM. Then we found out, though, that just is the procedure, the abortion procedure. That doesn't cover the transportation costs, the pharmaceutical costs, the overnight costs, and other doctor visits and so on. So we have no idea of what they're really spending on free elective abortion. And just 2 days ago, as we had some discussion on the House Finance Committee, because the gentleman from Fairbanks disputed some of the things I said. I said, it's all in the documents, and the documents I had are what the health department gave me. Lo and behold, Saturday afternoon, they pass out this document. I spent Sunday night reading it, and I apologize for being wrong. It was not 846 abortions they paid for it. It was 1,079 abortions. And they said, well, the difference is therapeutic abortions and elective abortions. What's a therapeutic abortion? Well, it's something that is elective that may have a medical connotation to it. And if you go over the list in here of everyone they have, it's a joke. But at least they gave us the list, and now some of you just might have a report that just came on our desk in our box to show a correction of the report. A correction. It's half the size, but it takes out everything referring to abortion. Someone made a mistake and sent me all the information, which is, to me, is phenomenal what they have been hiding and the true costs in general relief medicine. I am glad that we zeroed that out now, because that department had been hiding the truth. Therapeutical medical abortion in one case is three under that category, B222. Pregnant state incidental. So that's not an elective abortion now, it's a therapeutical one. Another is B22. Normal pregnancy under therapeutical, and two abortions were done under that. You'd have three kids. Contraceptive failures. Oh, come on, give us a break. You know, but main truth is that it's been a hard time in this state to get a handle on how many abortions are done under general relief medicine. And it doesn't matter, as the lady said in her letter, that we cut out that amount of money for abortions. They continue to do more and more with less and less money, which proves, in my mind, that they are using general relief medicine 99% for abortions and others just for camouflage. And I think that's deplorable. But basically, what the gentleman from Mountain View that I used to cover talked about is already taken care of in other programs. Thank you.
Senator Bryce?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Having sat on the budget subcommittee, maybe the chair of that budget subcommittee could help me straighten out some of the comments that were just made by my friend from District 14, which I find actually quite incredulous. Fact of the matter is that every document from the budget subcommittee through the finance committee to the documents that have been provided us shows the GRM, General Relief Medical Program, to be a straight decrement. There have been no transfers out. There's been nothing to reinvest into adoption services. And fact of the matter is, I don't know anybody in this state who wants to adopt a 54-year-old white, mentally ill individual. So I really would suggest that his ideas and figures there way off base. Fact of the matter is that these types of programs do fund people with net incomes of $300 or less a year. They had $300 or less a month with total assets of less than $500. Well, not only that, but Madam Speaker, excuse me, mental health services do not cover pneumonia. General relief medical services do. Mental health services do not cover chest pains and hypertension. General relief medical does. I would suggest that my friend from District 14 take a clear look at what's going on, honestly. We can have the philosophical debate about abortion, that's fine. I'm more than willing to sit there and have the discussion on 1,000, 800, whatever. Fact of the matter is, though, what we're talking about is 850 people who need insulin because they're diabetic. We're talking about people who need Procardia because they have high blood pressure. We're talking about people with depressive disorders that receive their medication through the GRM program, not through other programs that was alluded, not even alluded to, specifically stated. Those were absolutely inaccurate statements. I've been sitting on this budget subcommittee now 6 years, and for the life of me, I have not heard anything so far-fetched. Madam Speaker, by cutting general relief medical, what we do is, yes, we do address the abortion issues for a little bit, but I tell you what, Madam Speaker, they're going to pop up someplace else. They're going to pop up here. They're going to pop up there. It's like grabbing a water balloon. Tighter you squeeze it, the more places it's going to pop out until it blows up and gets you completely wet. Fact of the matter is, Madam Speaker, who we are leaving behind is a guy named Thomas who lives in a hostel in Anchorage, who receives depressive disorder medication, and he's in the process of applying to get on SSI. Well, that process can take up to 2 years. And in the meantime, if he ain't getting his medication, there's a good likelihood that the first line of defense for mental health provision is going to be our corrections facility. And that is not until he has gone out and hurt somebody. So, Madam Speaker, what we're talking about here is basic public safety of the people of Alaska, not as has been alluded to earlier, as free willing and spending on elective abortions. Madam Speaker, what the money, what the amendment does specifically is to help the people in this state who need it the most address chronic disease and illness that they experience in their life, who are not eligible for Medicaid, who are not eligible for any other type of program, and who without that, say, chemotherapy, will end up in the cemetery. So, Madam Speaker, we can have the debate all we want about the abortion issue. That's fine. That's dandy. Believe me, we will, because there's a bunch of other bunk in 325 that we're going to try to address later on. But by simply saying that by eliminating the GRM, that you're going to stop state-funded abortions, that is absolutely incorrect. That is short-sighted. That is throwing the baby out with the bathwater. And unfortunately, in this instance, we have a high potentiality of killing that baby.
Representative Elton.
Thanks, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I read over the lunch hour my horoscope for the day, and if you leave the body, I'd like to read two lines. Says,
Representative Elton, the members can't hear you.
Madam Speaker, two lines from my horoscope. It says, you know how to deal with the pressure that a friend creates, work together to reach a key goal. And I hope that horoscope is talking about this amendment, Madam Speaker. It's awful easy to stand up and say, well, this is what we're trying to accomplish, and that some of these other faces and some of these other Alaskans out there are going to be used simply for camouflage. And Madam Speaker, you know, you can make that argument, but we're talking about people that we'll probably never introduce from the galleries behind us. I mean, these aren't the people who are going to be visiting us in our offices or visiting us on the floor. These are the kind of people that really need our help. And Madam Speaker, I guess I get a little bit discouraged when I see people trying to address one problem and creating problems for those in our society that need the most help. And I don't think that's right. And I don't think it's right to say, well, I want to fix this problem, but I'm going to do it at the expense of some of these other Alaskans. Madam Speaker, we heard about one of the people from the previous speaker, but they're all over the state. And they need our help. Madam Speaker, I heard about a woman. She's 48 years old. She's been in the state for 14 years. She applied for her SSI more than a year ago. She still hasn't heard. She suffers from mental illness. She also suffers from respiratory disease and shingles, but GRM isn't really helping with that. But it is helping with her meds for her mental illness. Madam Speaker, if we accept the argument by the member from District 14, this woman doesn't get her meds. And I just don't see how we can do anything but help people like this out. And I think the argument was used the other day that we're taking a baseball bat to a problem that requires a fly swatter, maybe. I'm not conceding that there is a problem with abortion, but I don't want us led down the path of saying that because of the abortion issue, we can't help these people out. So I would encourage members of the body to vote yes on this amendment. Prove my horoscope right, Madam Speaker, that we can work together to solve the problem.
Representative Grusendorf.
Yes, thank you, Madam Speaker. It appears we have reached why this was reduced. It's become a philosophical debate of when does life begin, or more or less pro-life and pro-choice issues. But we as legislators have to be very careful here that, yes, it is an issue that we are dealing with and have to address, but at the same time, in addressing this, we have to be very careful that we don't cause hardships or jeopardize the health and lives of others. And that's exactly what we're doing. We're not just talking about the abortion issue itself. We're talking about people from 1 year down to however long their longevity happens to be. 110, whatever it is. And the comment here is for the poorest of the poor. Well, yeah, it's from those that can make a living, but you have to realize that there's a lot of people that have no insurance, health or medical insurance. And a person that can take care of themselves in just a matter of days could be in the category of the poorest of the poor. Last night, my staff got a call from Petersburg, and the person was very concerned that I was one of those that was advocating the cut in the general relief medical. And my staff assured him that that was not the case, that over the years I've supported it. But he was so concerned, he called again. And I did talk with his daughter. But this man was a fisherman and still would like to be. He's 60 years of age. In March of 1998, he had a heart attack. He was flown or medevac down to Seattle for treatment, and General Leith Medical paid for his hospital bills and ongoing medication that he has for hypertension. And he applied for SSI. But as indicated here, that time span of receiving it sometimes takes up to 2 years, and he is still waiting. Under the circumstances, he can qualify for $280 a month under our General Relief Medical to live on, temporary relief to assist him, and he's also on food stamps. If we cut the program out from some of these people who work very hard all their life, making a living for themselves and their family, basically not quite, a little bit beyond subsistence, but as I say, a medical disaster comes in a short period of time, boy, what you have in your nest egg is gone like that. And this is what happens to a lot of people. So I think we have to be careful and try to divorce ourselves as much as we can and realize that, yes, in this general relief medical program, there is this other issue that concerns many of us, from a pro-choice to a pro-life aspect. But please, what about the rest of those people? The fisherman from Petersburg probably has his philosophical beliefs one way or the other on this issue that seems to be the cause of this, but it won't address his problem and the problems that many other people have. It could be just by the will of whatever it is that one of us might not find ourselves in a position, but probably not if you're vested here in the state for 5 years and take insurance, you're probably covered. But there are a lot of people in the state of Alaska that don't have that coverage. In just a short period of time, they are wiped out. So when we say the poorest of the poor, please remember we're not talking about some individual that you may not necessarily want to associate with. We're talking about people that you meet in your communities, on your streets, that something like that could happen, and then where are they? So, Madam Speaker, I don't know how we can address this issue, but we must get separated, because I heard some statistics here that the money is used for, 87% of the money is used for the category that I'm talking about here, the 60-year-old fisherman. And whatever the percent is, I don't know whether it's, who's what. But what about the others? Can we afford to just jeopardize their health and their lives? I think not.
Senator Davies.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Well, Madam Speaker, I did sit on finance, and I do have this packet of materials that was presented to us on this issue. I can't say, Madam Speaker, that I've read every page in here, but I have gone through it a little bit. And I've gone back to the department and asked them once again, what is the correct number? Madam Speaker, I'm assured the correct number is in the vicinity of 15%. That's the amount of this GRM program that's expended on abortions. Madam Speaker, the question, it has been intimated that somehow this is getting out of hand. And so I've asked over the last 4 or 5 years, what are the numbers that we're talking about when you're comparing apples to apples? The numbers fluctuate, Madam Speaker. They drop down in the vicinity of 600. They rise up close almost to 900. But generally, they oscillate, and they kind of are around 800 and some per year. Madam Speaker, there's no evidence that I've been presented with that this program is, quote unquote, getting out of hand or out of control or accelerating or increasing. There have been increases from year to year, but there have also been decreases. Madam Speaker, I think of this whole big packet, we ought to read the cover letter that was provided here. Madam Speaker, the cover letter was written by cover memo by the Commissioner of Health and Social Services, by Karen Perdue. And for those of you who know Karen Perdue, she's not a person who's given to hyperbole. She's a person that's pretty cautious in the way she says things. And Madam Speaker, with the leave, I'd like to read one sentence which summarizes this packet of material. And that sentence is, quote, "The consequences of eliminating this program on July 1, 1998 are extremely serious and will result in severe hardships to thousands of Alaskans in the future. I urge you to I promised only one sentence. I'll stick with that." Madam Speaker, the word extremely is underlined in here. Commissioner Perdue says the consequences are extremely serious. I reiterate, she is not a person who's given to hyperbole. This is the person in the state of Alaska who's best situated to understand this sheaf of material. This is the person who's in the trenches every day dealing with these issues. She's the person where the buck stops. When the problems develop, she's the one that has to go in and figure out how to resolve them. The easy stuff, she doesn't have to deal with. The hard stuff comes up to the commissioner's side. The commissioner says the consequences are extremely serious for thousands of Alaskans. Madam Speaker, it's been said that no other states do this. Madam Speaker, 15 states, in fact, every state makes provision through their state program to fund abortions in one way or another. 15 states provide them in their state medical assistance programs. 5 states provide abortions in the case of endangerment, rape, incest, or other specified health circumstances. 27 states, plus the District of Columbia, provide abortions in the case of the endangerment of life or in the cases of rape or incest. And 3 states provide abortions in the case where life is endangered. When you add those numbers up, it comes to 50, Madam Speaker, plus District of Columbia. Madam Speaker, we don't have free medical, state policy that we give free abortions willy-nilly. Madam Speaker, the state policy is that there has to be a documented medical necessity. So the notion that somehow these are just, that there's some out-of-control policy in the state, and that we don't follow our policies, and that these are just lightly sought after elective abortions just simply is not true, Madam Speaker. In every case, this is a serious issue, and it's an issue between, and it ought to be in my view, an issue between the woman and her doctor. The question was asked, Madam Speaker, where does the Constitution guarantee funding for this? Well, of course, there is no direct constitutional provision to fund abortions, but there is a constitutional provision for equal protection under the law, and it's generally out of that, and also in a related sense under the privacy provision. A constitutional requirement that follows directly from those two provisions of our Constitution, both state and federal, that if you're going to provide medical care to some Alaskans or some U.S. citizens, then you have to provide medical care to all Alaskans or all U.S. citizens. Madam Speaker, medically required abortions are legal. There is no rational state purpose in distinguishing between those and other pregnancy-related services. As long as we're going to fund other pregnancy-related services, there's a constitutional requirement that we fund abortions. It's as simple as that. It's not complicated. It's equal protection. Madam Speaker, that's the abortion issue and apparently the motivation for taking away these funds. Madam Speaker, I want to talk about Kenny. A number of people in the Anchorage area probably know about, but many people in the rest of the state may not have heard his plight. Is a diabetic who collapsed on his living room floor in his mobile home in Spinard. Even though she did not live with him, she sometimes stayed with him because she didn't think that he should live alone. Although living with him would have constituted perhaps welfare fraud. This person was not eligible for Medicaid, Madam Speaker. He applied for some Social Security benefits, but took a while to obtain them. And they appealed, and he was denied at one point, and he appealed the decision. What Kenny and his wife discover is that if they separated, his income would be low enough that he would qualify for GRM. This was the only way that they could figure out how to get Kenny the medical care he needed. It was a classic catch-22, Madam Speaker, because he was too sick to live alone, and yet, if they lived together, they couldn't get the help they needed. In the end, the help came too late. Kenny died alone on a Sunday morning last September, complications from diabetes. A few days after Kenny died, his wife received a letter of reconsideration from the Office of Social Security based on Kenny's appeal filed in August. And he was found disabled as of July 1996, and that she would receive a lump sum payment as well as a one-time death benefit of $255. Madam Speaker, we are talking about the bottom rung of the safety net. If we take this away, there'll be many more people that will die alone and for reasons that make no sense. Madam Speaker, we need to have a certain basic level of compassion in this society. Remember that societies are judged by how they treat those who are the least fortunate among them. Madam Speaker, if we don't adopt this amendment, I think we will be harshly judged.
Representative Berkowitz.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. I've stood on this floor several times to debate the issue of choice. That's not why I'm standing today. I'm standing today because I don't want the safety net to be ripped. I don't want the safety net to become a casualty of the abortion debate. There are other avenues and other venues available to discuss abortion, to limit it. That's what the member from District 14 seeks to do. But here, with this amendment, Madam Speaker, we are striving to protect the safety net, to protect people like James. James is 37, has a brain tumor. He relies on general relief medical for his anti-seizure medicine. Without GRM money, he has almost no resources. Madam Speaker, this is not a vote about saving money. This is a vote about values. This is a vote about compassion and kindness and the sense of community we want to have. I heard the Commissioner of Health and Social Services tell us that people will die if this cut is made. And it is indeed a cold day in Alaska when budget cuts cause people to die. So before we push the buttons, I think people should ask two questions. What kind of people are we? And what kind of people do we want to be?
Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, this is one of the sadder ones to stand up for. It's pretty hard to stand up and talk about this issue and exchange smiles, to be honest. Because, Madam Speaker, I believe that this is a place where the majority has gone too far, sort of crossed over the line. We've talked several times about the majority is here and on a plan of cutting the budget. But obviously it's how you cut that budget that's going to make the difference and probably going to determine how you're judged. And Madam Speaker, from the words that I have heard in the last couple of days on this issue, and from people who work with this program in the department. I believe this is a life and death amendment. I'm honestly am convinced, because of what people that work with this program have told me, that this is a life and death vote. That we are somehow cutting off people, some of the poorest people that have no other choice. And Madam Speaker, we've all looked at the polls, we've seen that all the people, quote, they want the budget cut. But I can't believe if you put this issue out to a debate or out to a poll or a vote, that this amendment would pass in the 90% range. There can't, doesn't seem like there could be, when you talk about the issue as we have brought up here. Only one majority member have I heard come up and tell me why to cut this budget and not to vote for this amendment, and it's dealing solely with the abortion issue. Madam Speaker, I hope that your caucus will look inside themselves and recognize that this is one of the places where you've gone too far, where people will get hurt if we don't rectify this problem. And Madam Speaker, I also want to talk about, briefly, one person that I've learned about, and her name is Charlene. She is a single 48-year-old woman who rents a home in Anchorage and has lived there since 1983. And she worked until December of 1996. She suffers from severe depression and diabetes. Madam Speaker, she receives help from the General Relief Medical that we're talking about here in order to receive her insulin. Without that insulin, she obviously would not live. She also receives, Madam Speaker, some eye medication because her diabetes dries out her eyes, and if she didn't get the eye medication, she would go blind. She lives, Madam Speaker, on not a huge amount of money that we're putting out to them, but $280 a month in interim relief and food stamps. Now, Madam Speaker, we're not talking about people trying to get rich. We're talking about people trying to just survive, to live. This person has also applied for SSI and has not got there. Now, Madam Speaker, I just cannot believe that we as a body can collectively go through with a cut in this program like this with these kind of facts. She is one of 95 people. They're in the same situation, Madam Speaker. 95 people. Madam Speaker, I ask you to rethink this cut to this budget, put this money back, vote yes on this amendment.
Further debate? Representative Kemplin and wrap up.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The issues here that were raised here by the representative from District 14 about free elective abortions, the state does not offer funding for free elective abortions. The physician must determine that medical necessity exists for the procedure. It must be a professional decision. The comment regarding where in the Constitution it states about funding of abortions. The Department of Law has advised the Department of Health and Social Services that Alaska's constitutional right to privacy requires the state to provide abortion services if it provides other comprehensive pregnancy services. So what happens, Madam Speaker, if General Relief Medical is eliminated? 350 to 400 extremely sick and poor people each month will be left without health coverage for conditions such as diabetes, mental illness, hypertension, heart disease, and chemotherapy for cancer. They'll have to make a choice on whether or not to spend their $280 cash payment on food and shelter or the prescription medication they need. Accident victims will have to depend upon the charity care of Alaska's community hospitals in order to receive treatment. For the people who receive medications for mental illness will end up in API or in prison. Charitable organizations will very likely inherit a large part of the burden of finding care for these people. Madam Speaker, some of these diabetics, the hypertensives, the cancer victims, and those with seizure disorders will not find a way to obtain the medication that they need. Their conditions will deteriorate, and they will either have to require expensive hospitalization, or in some cases, they will die. So, Madam Speaker, this amendment, it really goes to the very core of who we are as Alaskans. And it will, in my mind, define the values of the members who vote no on this amendment, Madam Speaker. I hope they have it in their hearts to vote yes and give those Alaskans who have no other hope, restore that hope to them.
Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I wasn't going to speak, but I thought I needed to at least address a few issues, and one was addressed to me early on in the process about funding of other programs. I would just note that as we go through our process to make our cap, had I not had this money available, we would not have been able to fund some of the other programs that there was money put into. And when, as I've said before, when you drop a dollar in a bucket, when you try and pull it out after it's all mixed around, it's hard to follow. But clearly the governor's tried to do that with Medicaid money, and it would have been hard to fund many of those programs, including the subsidized adoptions, the community mental health grants, and foster programs, had we not had this money available to fund those programs. So I think within some reason you can say that that did occur. I want to point out that I think there's a little misperception about the $280 a month. The $280 a month is not affected by this particular program. It's general relief assistance, and they will continue to get that. I think I heard some people suggesting that at $280 a month would go away. That is not the case. The $300 a month that you have to make less than $300 a month to be eligible for this program is partially true and partially false. If you're going to have an abortion under this program, you have to be Medicaid eligible, or at least up to that level, which is a much higher income level, so that if you want to get an abortion, you can make much more than $300 a month. This is a reimbursement program. The money does not go directly to the individuals. What you will find in many of the cases is that hospitals and other health care providers will take a larger write-off because of this. Right now, in many of the circumstances, General Relief Medical only pays 28% of the Medicaid rate for many of these services that are provided, so that it is not providing 100% already. And yes, they will be forced, if they choose to continue to provide that service, to eat some more, but I think in many of the cases they will continue to do that, and people will continue to get the care. One other issue, in mental health, I would just point out, we do have some community health programs in certain areas, like in Anchorage, where people can get service on a sliding scale basis, whether they're Medicaid eligible or not. So some of these services are available to folks, whether it's under this program or not. And in the mental health area, that was brought up a couple of times, we do have grants, and there were discussion in subcommittee about this year. We do have grants to mental health providers to provide services to those that are not Medicaid eligible. And these types of individuals are specifically the ones that are addressed in many of the community health centers across the state, and we have them in many places. So it is not that there isn't money. In fact, those went up a little bit this year. So there are some. I'm not here to argue all the points. I just wanted to make it clear that I think there were some misperceptions in some parts of this about the issue.
Are you ready for the question? Representative Martin.
Madam Speaker, I do feel compelled.
Representative Martin has the floor.
I do feel compelled because of some of the statements that have been made questioning my remarks and my particular figures. First, the gentleman from Fairbanks said these numbers are all crazy. We don't know what the numbers are. Well, all we had to do is read the medical program for 1997, and they specifically come out with the general revenue funds, medical funds, and it does show that 1,600 people participated in that program. I'd be glad to Xerox. As a matter of fact, I gave this information to him previously. He did read some of that information pertaining to the state funding of abortion from now, the National Organization for Abortions. And it does say 15 states fund abortion for women medical assistance programs in all or most circumstances, as we were saying. No other state is more liberal than Alaska in free abortions. Then he also breaks down the other states, but he didn't say 27 states and the District of Columbia exclude from the medical assistance programs except for rape, life of the mother, and incest. And we do pay that. We do use general fund monies to match those cases with Medicaid, but it's not as liberal as I thought before. The gentleman from the Mountain View said that there are regulations and there are requirements. Well, Madam Speaker, that was completely wiped out by an agreement on April the 19th, 1990, by the former Commissioner of Health and Social Service, Mr. Mahler, and it makes it very clear that only the doctor would decide on the requirements and the medical need. The department is only responsible under this agreement to making sure the right abortion code was used. They are not to question the physician in any other way. There's no other way to find out what the financial background of the woman is, because that's confidential information. They do present a form to them after the abortion that they should fill out within 30 days, but we've never seen those forms brought out to us. So there is confusion, very much so, as to what we are paying for abortions and how many people are involved. The latest report was 1,076.
Are you ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 4? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
15 yeas, 24 nays.
And so Amendment Number 4 fails to pass. Would the clerk please read the next amendment?
Amendment Number 5 by Representative Nicolai on page 29, line 21.
Representative Nicolai.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would move Amendment Number 5.
Here's objection, Representative Nicolai.
Madam Speaker, what this amendment does is restore $150,000 to our subsistence field offices. Restoring these funds partially offset cuts that have crippled the division's subsistence data collection program, cuts that have occurred over the past several years. These cuts further eroded the ability of the division to collect updated subsistence harvest and use information. This information is important data that is used and needed by our Board of Fisheries and Game to develop sensible state regulations. A weaker state subsistence program makes it easier for the federal government to take over subsistence management of fish and game in Alaska. This amendment will fund additional months of existing positions and provide funds to contract with local organizations to help with subsistence data gathering. Management without good information negatively impacts subsistence, commercial fisheries, sport fisheries, and general hunting by non-subsistence users. A vote for this amendment is a vote for better management of our fish and game resources by providing our state boards with updated information. And I would recommend the members of this body vote yes on this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I chaired the Fish and Game Subcommittee. I would like to note for the members that this is the funding that's in the budget currently is the same level as was provided last year. And I would disagree slightly that this will help prevent the feds coming in from taking over subsistence fish and game management. I think everybody through the debates that we've had on this floor realized that it's a little bit bigger issue than $160,000 that's going to deal with whether or not the federal government has control over fish and game management in Alaska. And I would suggest that until we deal with that overall situation and see where we go, that flat funding, particularly in the times of short revenues, is appropriate in this particular division.
Representative Grusendorf.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. While it's true we're talking about $150,000, we have to look at the accumulative effects over the last 5 years to the Division of Subsistence. It has, for all practical purposes, been close to eliminated as to its effectiveness. And because of that, it's very clear to me why we have basically lost control of our management of big game, because in no way are we in a position to address the needs dealing with the subsistence use of big game. And the national government thus moved in and filled the void. See, Madam Speaker, when you have a subsistence division, what the first thing must do, when you look at the last bill that we had dealing with subsistence, it indicates that there's going to be various regional boards, and right now we have regional fish and game boards, and we have a state board of game and fish. They have to receive that data. And that data has to be brought up current so that good decisions can be made. Now, if they don't have that information available to them, those that are managing our fish and game stocks have no other choice but to be very, very conservative, and maybe to the point of reducing the harvest level more than it should be, just to be conservative, to make sure that the sustained yield principle is being followed. In other words, they don't want to make a mistake. So when we don't have good information, we cause our professionals to make decisions to hedge on the side of conservation to make sure that we do not jeopardize the resource. Now that may be good, and I believe it is, and I appreciate them approaching it that way. But Madam Speaker, with the bill that we have passed over to the other body, we have to realize that we're going to have to put a lot of emphasis in these areas to comply with the demands of that piece of legislation. And just thinking about the fiscal notes alone that are trailing behind that piece of legislation 406, it's obvious, Madam Speaker, that we're to the point now where we don't have that information, and the result will be it's going to definitely affect the commercial fisheries, sport fisheries, general sports hunting, and we're behind, Madam Speaker. And that's the result of the last 5 years.
Further debate? Are you ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt amendment number 5? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
9 yeas, 21 nays.
And so amendment number 5 fails to pass. Will the clerk please read the next?
Amendment number 6 by Representative Cabina, beginning page 22, line 32.
Mr. Minority Leader.
Madam Speaker, this is an amendment I can smile about. I'd move amendment number 6.
There is objection, Representative Cabina.
Madam Speaker, we've had a lot of debate about school funding this year. What this amendment would do is very simply add 5% to the foundation formula. Yes. It's plain old general fund money. We're going to put up or shut up, Madam Speaker. It would change the foundation from $61,000 to $64,000. Now, I know my good friend, co-chair on finance, has been sort of tight the last 3 years. But, Madam Speaker, I have no doubt that he would like to vote for this amendment because it would add $12,218,000 in the Anchorage School District. It is a large number when you think about you're trying to cut the budget. It's $37 million. But, Madam Speaker, we have gone since the
The last time I was in the majority, sitting there controlling the votes, is the last time we increased the funding for our schools. We have heard all over the state the problems that we have. We have this bill that I won't even think about its name so that we don't get all those bad feelings from it that is sitting in finance right now. And all is that does is have some school districts say, hey, we recognize we need more money, but we got this whole thing about cutting the budget, so we're going to take it from some and give it to ourselves. We don't want to take that route. You don't want to take that route. And, Madam Speaker, I can tell you that I know in your district, I've saved this article, Madam Speaker, since Friday, December 9th, 1997, on the Kenai Peninsula schools and the problems that they've been having down there. A 10-year battle to make ends meet on your school district, Madam Speaker. And I tell you, I do not do this to embarrass you personally, but I think this Kenai School District is one that really is an interesting one for all us to look at, because it's sort of, it's got urban, it's got rural, it's got big schools, it's got little schools. It's at the cap. They can't even give any more money. As a matter of fact, they're probably cheating, because you have that good mayor down there on the Kenai Borough now that is putting in, I understand, about $1.2 million more on funding some things for the schools that we're not counting as part of really schools. So, I mean, they're doing everything they can. But even so, your superintendent says, we're systematically dismantling the district. Systematically dismantling the district. You know what they've done down there? They've had to cut back on equipment, vocational ed teachers, textbooks, you name it, you're cutting back on it, Madam Speaker. They cut the budget every year since the mid-1980s. Just trying to help you out, Madam Speaker. Also trying to liven us up a little bit. Madam Speaker, in seriousness, we all recognize that that we do need to do something for this school budget. I know this is a large amount of money. I believe that we would all go home, though, if we voted for it. We would all go home feeling so much better, because we would go home knowing, God darn it, I did the right thing. And you know what? All those people back home would have a smile on their face, just like you got right now, all those kids, because we wouldn't be cutting the library out. We would make sure they had books to read. Madam Speaker, I propose that we take a 15-minute break. You guys go back into that caucus room nap there, have a good talk on this amendment, and come on out with a positive feeling.
Further debate? Are you ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 6? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
8 yeas, 22 nays.
And so Amendment Number 6 fails to pass, Mr. Minority Leader.
Very brief, that is.
House stand at ease.
Good try.
Clerk, please read the next amendment.
Amendment Number 7 by Representative Davies to page 51, line 16.
Representative Davies.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move Number 7.
There is objection. Representative Davies.
Madam Speaker, Amendment Number 7 would fund the University of Alaska at the governor's requested level. Now, the first amendment I ran supported the regents level, which is about $3.5 million more than this. And Madam Speaker, I, much to your pleasure, I'm sure, will not repeat that whole presentation. But Madam Speaker, just refer back to it, because everything I said there applies to this, except that this doesn't do quite as good a job. What this would do, if we were to fund the budget at this level, which is the level the governor requested, which is incidentally the level we funded it at in FY97, this would just cover the required salary increases over that are required this year. So it would be the same nominal dollars plus an increment of $3.5 million to fund the salaries. Now, Madam Speaker, on the other amendment, chair of the University Budget Subcommittee said he wanted to talk about a few numbers. Madam Speaker, I just want to mention a couple other numbers in this context. First one is $2 billion. $2 billion, Madam Speaker, is the amount that the permanent fund earns in 1 year right now. Let me mention another number, Madam Speaker. That number is $1 billion. Madam Speaker, that's the amount, roughly, that's in the surplus earnings reserve account. Let me mention one last number, Madam Speaker. And that number is zero. Madam Speaker, zero is the amount that we collect in the state income tax every year. Madam Speaker, when you vote on this amendment, I'd like you to think about those numbers. $2 billion, $1 billion, and zero. Thank you.
Further debate? Are you ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 7? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Clerk, please open the roll. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
10 yeas, 22 nays.
And so Amendment Number 7 fails to pass. Would the clerk please read the next amendment?
Amendment Number 8 by Representative Nicolai, beginning page 19, line 33.
Representative Nicolai.
Madam Speaker, I move Amendment Number 8.
There is objection. Representative Nicolai.
What this amendment would do is increase the Head Start programs, increase the services to other communities who want to have a Head Start program. There are many that are not being funded right now, and I would state for the record that I do have nieces and nephews that have started their education within the Head Start program. It's a good program for learning. And it's a program that is offered to babies up, you know, even that are less than a year old. I watched my niece who was like 10 months old and watched the Head Start teacher play with toys and stuff like that. They're monitored by these teachers, and the teachers help them develop their motor skills and reading skills and all of that. But I think that this is a good amendment. It's a step in the right direction for furthering our children's education. And I would encourage all the members of this body to vote for this amendment. Thank you.
Further debate? Representative Coring.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I chair the Budget Subcommittee for DCRA. And what we did here with this particular one was deny the governor's increment, the addition that he was asking for. So what we're talking about is funding at last year's level with no cut to the program. Thank you.
Representative Grusendorf.
Yes, thank you, Madam Speaker. The cut may not be to the program, but it is certainly towards those that are eligible. Right now, the amount of money that is available under the same funding that we had the fiscal year we're in, only 22% of those eligible children were allowed to enter into this program. With the money that was asked for, the increment by the executive branch, that would have brought the percentage up to 25% of those children that were eligible would qualify. And it's kind of interesting when we talk about the percentages here that of that 100% of the 25% that are serviced, about 12% of these children have certain disabilities. And these programs are geared to help that youngster adjust and become part of a school setting and getting them ready for the school setting. And one of the most important things we can do is prepare a young person to be able to meet the challenges of a formal school setting. And I think it's a mistake for us to consider that the answer to this is at the same level of funding when we're not servicing all some of the children that could use and benefit by this program.
Representative Davies.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Just very briefly, this Head Start program is one that has been tracked and studied nationwide. It has been clearly demonstrated to be cost-effective and also very directly effective in terms of the kids that participate in it. Madam Speaker, there's a demonstrated track record, a success of success. These students, when they get to school, do better. Madam Speaker, these kids, when they get to school, cause less trouble. These kids have higher self-esteem. So, Madam Speaker, this is one of those cases like the man with the oil can. You can pay him now or you can pay him later. If you pay him later, it's going to cost you a lot more.
I'll stand at ease. Further debate? Are you ready for the question? There's a call placed on the House. Representative Kemplin.
Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Andy. Call. Thank you. Representative Kemplin, you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Yes, this amendment actually kind of identifies one of the things that troubles me about how we budget dollars here in the state legislature. And it, again, reflects, I think, a significant weakness in how we appropriate dollars. Because it seems to me that there's a continual focus on this, on the short term, and on the prior year's budget. And we really are not addressing any long-term goal. We're not really addressing, where we want to take the state. This lack of a vision for the state is troubling, because here, with this amendment, this is about investing for the long term. Child assistance and Head Start grants are an investment for the future. They're not necessarily an investment for next year, but they are an investment for far into the future, Madam Speaker. But yet our budget process, there's no mechanism in place to reflect the return on that investment. So what we do is we wind up just wrestling with these numbers on a year-to-year basis, while our needs, while our public needs, the needs of the citizenry, go unmet. It was mentioned a little earlier by the representative from District 2 about how few kids in the state of Alaska are actually their needs are being met, and about how long the waiting list is for these services. Unmet needs of Alaskans. I think that's one of the key issues here, Madam Speaker. And that's what this amendment does. It helps to meet those unmet needs. Not totally, because it will not fully fund what is required to meet all of the needs out there for child assistance and for Head Start. But it does move us forward, and I hope that we can find the ability to spend the money for our kids.
Representative Elton?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, you and I spent a lot of time together last summer and fall talking about deferred maintenance, and I think we could all make the argument that this is deferred maintenance. And if we don't spend the money now, we're going to be spending it later. Madam Speaker, if we take the normally accepted figures, where every dollar we spend on this program saves us $7 in the long run, then we ought to be able to buy into the argument that this $1 million expenditure is actually a $6 million savings. Madam Speaker, we've been subsidizing the state budget for a long time by not paying for deferred maintenance. This is another example of it. I would recommend a yes vote so that we can save money in the future.
Ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 8? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
11 yeas, 28 nays.
And so Amendment Number 8 fails to pass. Would the clerk please read Number 9?
Amendment number 9 by Representative Berkowitz, beginning page 23, line 12.
I move Amendment 9.
There is objection, Representative Berkowitz.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. So for the members to take a look at the amendment, because if they can read it, then they should support it. This amendment tries to add $250,000 back into the reading program that the state has. And it's to ensure that the standards we've set are met, that students are able to read at a fourth grade level. And all of us read all the time. We read books, we read bills, and occasionally we get to read billboards even. But reading is essential for maintaining a high quality of life. And it's, as any educator will tell you, a student who can read at fourth grade level at the appropriate time, that's a great indication of how well that student will perform throughout. I've been fortunate. I love to read, and I don't know whether it's responsible or to be blamed for some of my illusions, but I've definitely enjoyed reading and would think that this body should do all it can to ensure that the students of Alaska have the chance to read. Because I've learned that if you have the chance to read, you can learn to think. And if you learn to think, you at least have the key to being able to live independently. There's one last thing. I don't really like to quote bumper stickers, but there's a bumper sticker we should keep in mind when we discuss this bill, or this amendment rather. That's, if you think education is expensive, try ignorance.
The debate? You ready for the question? Question being Representative Grusendorf.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I have trouble reading, and therefore it takes me a little bit longer to see where we are on the agenda here. Madam Speaker, we're talking about fourth grade reading level. And this is probably the most crucial area to catch them, to refer a child back and give them the skills so that they can get back into the main flow and compete. Once that child moves beyond that grade level, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth grade, and they still can't read, we lose them. They perhaps, out of self-consciousness or embarrassment, find themselves doing other things and may not even finish school or actually are doing struggling. And we have to face the facts that reading skills is the key to learning. At least in our society, is the major key to learning. And we have to have a system. If we're going to insist upon having exit examinations to come out of our 12th grade with certain skills in reading and writing and math, it's very obvious in order to prepare for that examination, these young people have to have the reading skills. And we have to catch them at that level. In fact, preferably sooner. But at the same time, I guess the school districts could address that. But at minimum, from a state level, we should encourage, by having extra funds available for school districts, to come in there and make sure that that youngster can successfully compete and graduate from our high school, our school system. So I think it's a good investment. It's the key and perhaps the answer to everything that lies in the future and the dreams of a young person going through our system.
Representative Kelly?
Madam Speaker, a quick response. This was the budget that I was the subcommittee chairman over, and it was an increment to the budget, and we denied it because it is in times when revenues are shrinking, if you add something somewhere, you have to take it from somewhere else, and we went through the department's budget, and we didn't think, in light of the $780 million that we give school districts to achieve just the thing that the former speaker was talking about, that we thought it was a good idea to begin taking money from somewhere else to do these programs. So it was an increment, and we denied it.
Representative Bryce.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Given the growth in Alaska's prisons population and the fact that a large number of those people don't read, Madam Speaker, just think, if we were to invest this $250,000, we might be able to teach another 250, maybe 500 students to read adequately and keep them out of jail. Think about the savings that could mean down the line.
Ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 9? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
10 yeas, 28 nays.
And so amendment number 9 fails to pass. Would the clerk please read number 10?
Amendment number 10 by Representative Bryce, beginning page 19, line 21.
Representative Bryce?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move amendment number 10.
There is objection. Representative Bryce?
This is what I call my property tax relief amendment, Madam Speaker. A lot of the discussion that we've had in the past deals with the well, I moved it and it was objected. Yeah.
You can continue, Representative Bryce.
Well, I'll move it again if I don't get an objection. Darn. As I was saying, this is my property tax relief amendment. Madam Speaker, there's a corresponding increase in property taxes with the decrease in state support of local municipalities and local governments. As we trim back on our state's participation in municipal assistance and revenue sharing, that requires municipal governments to increase property taxes to maintain their services such as fire protection or roads. So what we end up doing is just cost shifting the tax burden away from the state to the property taxpayers. Madam Speaker, that's bad for economic development, it's bad for the state. Madam Speaker, I would suggest that we need to have a little property tax relief, and this is one way we can do that.
Mr. Minority Leader?
Well, Madam Speaker, thank you. This is one that I also like. I think we had the gentleman from Anchorage that sits right behind me talk the other day about, I think it was Yellow Journalism was his comments or something, about the communities complaining about the cuts in revenue sharing. But, Madam Speaker, I happen to agree with them. I believe we have done this every year. We take a little bit more. Usually it's 5% or something. I think this was a 5% cut again this year. But it does do exactly what they say it does. It requires them to raise their taxes. And they've had to do so over the years, Madam Speaker. And I think that being from the conservative party that I am and trying to ensure that the taxes of my constituents are not raised, I would hope that we would adopt this amendment.
Further debate? Representative Berkowitz.
Thanks very much, Madam Speaker. I got something from the municipality of Anchorage indicating that they like municipal assistance revenue sharing. I hope that doesn't come as a surprise to my colleagues who also are from Anchorage. If I could read very briefly two quick sentences, is that there's been a 67% drop in state assistance in the last 12 years. And this causing an increased reliance on local tax revenues, which represents a form of tax shifting from the state to the local level. Madam Speaker, I'm sure none of us are in favor of any kind of tax shifting. I think we should all shoulder the responsibility where it belongs. But if we can do anything to alleviate the tax burden of the folks in Anchorage, which is, I believe, my responsibility, I'm happy to step forward, which is why I'm supporting this amendment. And I encourage, at the very least, my fellow members, even if they are from the other party, from Anchorage, in supporting this. Thank you.
Representative Grusendorf.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Over the last 4 or 5 years, municipal assistance state-shared revenue, I guess now we call it safe communities, programs have really been hit hard by the reductions that we have made in their budgets. And the end result is they're probably getting less than 25 cents on the dollar now for basic services that once we felt was in our best interest to support. Police protection, fire protection, the general things of roads, things that we thought were important that we wanted them to do. And we indeed have shifted the tax emphasis on them while at the same time shying away from that question ourselves, insisting upon them being the ones that tax people for these services that normally we would put money into. So I wish that we would reconsider our thoughts on municipal assistance state shared revenue, because we are getting into the pockets of the residents of municipalities. They may not know it, but we're there and we're forcing it through our budget reductions. It within this case is really not necessary.
Further debate? You ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt amendment number 10? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
11 yeas, 28 nays.
And so amendment number 10 fails to pass. This time we're going to take a 15-minute at ease. We'll return to the chambers at 3:30. Clerk, please read the next amendment on her desk.
Amendment number 11 by Representative Kukesh, beginning page 19, line 14.
Representative Kukesh?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move amendment number 11.
There is objection. Representative Kukesh?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Amendment number 11 adds $87,100 to restore funding for the position of Special Assistant to the Commissioner. Madam Speaker, the Special Assistant to the Commissioner fulfills a number of duties which are important to the efficient function of the Commissioner's office. As a Commissioner's professional staff, the Special Assistant's most important duty is that as liaison to the legislature. It's the duty of that person to track and review legislation that affects the department, schedule staff testimony, and working with legislators and their staff to fulfill requests for information. The Special Assistant also works to implement the Commissioner's directives regarding internal and external departmental communication. Elimination of the Special Assistant position would be certainly extremely detrimental to the efficient function of the Commissioner's office. Madam Speaker, I also know this individual on a personal basis, and I really think that she does an excellent job for this department, works very hard on behalf of the state of Alaska, and is someone who would be sorely missed if her position was eliminated. I urge everyone to support me in adoption of this amendment. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further debate? Representative Grusendorf?
Yes, thank you, Madam Speaker. Of all the commissioners, the Commissioner of Community Affairs probably has more entities to contact and work with than any other commissioner, and I'm mainly talking about the political subdivisions of the state. I'm not sure how many rural communities we have, but basically the Commissioner of Community and Regional Affairs is responsible to meet their needs and assist them in anything from economic development to discussions as to sewer and water projects and things that you generally would think that a small government would have. Everything from telling them how to develop a bookkeeping system to running audits to making sure their clerks give the right reports, the right information, and also deal in the areas of some of their utilities. Because of all these little entities that exist in the state, political subdivisions, it's very obvious that the commissioner himself is not in a position to attend all the functions, all the different groups that are trying to seek his or her ear in trying to solve a problem in these communities. And the Special Assistant has oftentimes served at that capacity. I imagine perhaps the downfall of this individual is that this person is also signed to Rural Cap. This individual is responsible for Rural Cap, AFN, many other similar programs of which this person becomes the eyes and ears to the commissioner as to what is happening out in the rural areas. I think it would be a mistake to eliminate this position. I don't know what the rationale is to why this person is being eliminated. This position seems to have been targeted for the last 3 or 4 years. I hope it's not based upon organization or political affiliation or anything of that nature, but I am afraid, Madam Speaker, that I'm very suspicious of that fact and think it is a mistake to use that rationale for the removal of this position.
Further debate? Representative Corin?
Speaker, I respectfully request my colleagues to say no to this particular amendment here. The rationale, if I may just briefly answer that one, is the fact that DCRA, to begin with, as a small department, there's only 140 to 150 employees in the department, and we feel they just do not need to have as much upper management as they currently have over there. We feel that it's certainly warranted to trim part of the bureaucracy over there. And I might point out that after looking at this department in depth, we feel very comfortable, very confident that they can adequately meet their needs over there with the management structure without this position,
which would be done so by the commissioner, the deputy commissioner, as well as the various division directors.
Further debate? You ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt amendment number 11? Members, please.